All right, coming up here in hour number two of Thursday Night Tailgate, we're going to be joined by Paul Alexander and Denny McClain. And before Paul joins us, I want to give a shout-out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. Folks, please help us support a wonderful cause that's taking care of so many of the guys that left, you know, so much of themselves out on the field. Remember, these are the guys who played back when they still had to get off-season jobs to support themselves and their families. It's organizations like this one that was started up by Mike Ditka. Again, the Gridiron Greats, who are there trying to help the guys that we all grew up watching and reading about. Please go online to gridirongreats.org to see how you can get involved. All right, now back in making his 15th appearance with us on Thursday Night Tailgate is AT&T Sportsnet host and TNT Hall of Famer, Paul Alexander. One of the many blessings that Bob and I have had on this show is getting to know Paul over the last few years. He is not only one of the best, you know, sports hosts on TV and radio anywhere in the country, but he is also the Pirates and Penguins pre- and post-game show host, and he does such a fantastic job also covering the Steelers, and he's been fantastic to us over the years, and we are honored that he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Paul, Chris, and Bob, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, my friend.
Hi, Paul. Yeah, Merry Christmas, guys. God bless you. You're very kind. Thank you.
So, Paul, let's go ahead. Let's rip the Band-Aid off right away. Catch or no catch?
It's no catch. It's the goofiest rule. The good news is Mike Tomlin and others are on the competition committee with the NFL. I'll go back 16 years ago. I was actually in New England at old New England Stadium for the Raiders game and the tuck rule. And I remember having a conversation with the late, great Dan Rooney, and I had just gotten back from New England covering that game because the winner of that game obviously would play Pittsburgh in the 2001 AFC Championship game. And I said, can you believe that that happened? And he goes, it was the correct call of a horrible rule, and it will be changed. And that was so prophetic because it was. And that was the correct call on a horrible, horrible rule. Had that been a handoff and had, you know, the situation been where it was a running back instead of a wide receiver, it's a touchdown. Had there been contact with Jesse James, it's a touchdown. It's just, it's a horrible rule. And the scary part to me is if you look at the New England game winner with Cooks against the Texans, he had both feet just inside the boundary in the end zone. He dives out of bounds, did not possess the football. They ruled it a touchdown. So
right.
That was a horrible interpretation of the rule. Although I don't imagine anyone at that point thought there was a real issue with it. To me, the whole replay system, it's really had been developed to make sure there was not an egregious error determining the outcome of a football game. When you have 4 minutes, four entire minutes, to stew over a call, to me, right then and there, there's nothing inconclusive about that. Right then and there, you have to go with the ruling on the field. If you couldn't reverse that within 4 minutes, it's inconclusive, and the ruling on the field stands. And that's what so, I think, makes people just so tired of the NFL, so tired of how it's adjudicated, so tired of how it's officiated, because they called it a completion, for heaven's sakes, when they went through the entire explanation of why they ruled it an incomplete pass. So, long story, shortened to the best we can, and obviously it's been ad nauseum here in Pittsburgh, where that's all that's been talked about. It was honestly, I believe, the correct interpretation of an absolutely ludicrous rule.
And Paul, if you're Keith Butler or Tomlin for that matter, in that game, at what point do you realize Sean Davis can't cover Gronk one-on-one and he needs help over the top? And then you try to make Brady beat you with Brandon Cooks or Danny Amendola because, you know what, you're taking Gronk out of the game.
Yeah, and to me, the only point that it really became ridiculous was on the two-point conversion when everybody in America, everybody outside of America that happened to be an NFL fan knew the ball was going to Gronk, except for, I guess, the Steelers. They were somehow unaware. That's unacceptable. That just the whole world knew the ball was going to him, except for, I guess, the Steelers, who left one poor man on an island to try and cover a 6'7" monolith with great speed and, like, vice grips for hands that hasn't dropped the ball since the mid-'80s. I don't even know if he was alive in the mid-'80s, but he didn't drop a ball in the mid-'80s. I can guarantee that. Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous. But when you look at the overall performance from the Steelers' defense and the team, okay, maybe the concept was Gronk's going to get his, but we're still going to be able to win the game. And we're not going to have to change what we do dramatically. If you really allow the Jesse James catch to be a catch and a touchdown, we're probably not talking about how ridiculously wide open Gronk was on too many occasions. We're talking about how, all right, Gronk got his, but the Steelers still found a way. But if a rematch is inevitable, and I know the Steelers fans certainly hope so, the Steelers hope so, unless someone else does their dirty work. Keep in mind, the Steelers haven't won a Super Bowl going through New England. Someone else has taken care of the Patriots for them. So that they're the boogeyman in Pittsburgh. You know, they're the one that the great undead that, you know, oh, we have the dead men walking and all these silly shows now with zombies. The Patriots are a real life zombie for the Steelers. And if you think about what's, you know, happened and transpired with New England, their last two Super Bowl victories have been gifts. Seattle unconscionably threw the football in that horrible decision by Pete Carroll, and, you know, that should haunt Seattle fans forever. Atlanta simply gave a Super Bowl away to New England. Now, granted, they're the recipient. They have the Lombardis. But now then you see three different occasions this year already, New England has been gifted a game-changing call at the end of a game by the same gentleman, by the way, in New York. So I'm not a conspiracy guy. But when does this luck run out? When do they have to actually earn it? And yes, of course, I'm going to revisit Spygate. It happened. It's real. And the most damning evidence of all is the fact that the real evidence was destroyed. When do you destroy evidence? You destroy evidence when people can't handle the truth. And Roger Goodell was smart enough to know we can't take Super Bowls away. We can't, like the NCAA so bogusly does, where they take away championships and victories and bowl wins. No, it happened, and you can't go in reverse history, for heaven's sakes. Spygate happened. I was in the locker room in 2001 and 2004. In 2001, Joey Porter looked at me and just said, it's as if they knew what we were going to do before we did it. And in hindsight, guess what? They did. So right. I hate to go all the way back there. But this New England thing, to me, is getting a little tiresome. I mean, I covered the game in New England for the Tuck rule. Okay. It was the correct interpretation of a horrible rule. But these guys are living in some sort of bizarre, like almost like a parallel universe where things just seem to work out for them. And that game was a right. prime example of they had no business winning that game.
Right. None. Right?
I mean, absolutely
agreed.
Not.
Yeah.
So that leads me to my next question.
So we ripped
Paul.
The Band-Aid off pretty hard there, didn't we, guys?
So let's take that a step further now. Maybe it goes in the opposite direction. Because here's where I'm confused a little bit. James Conner goes down with an injury, right? We lose him for the season. And then they go out and sign Stephen Ridley, former Patriot. And not D'Angelo Williams. Are we trying to, milk a little bit of information? We're looking ahead saying, you know what, if it happens again, maybe we can get a little intel here?
You know, you have no idea. You know, when you're off for an entire, you know, D'Angelo has not been on a roster this entire season. So he might just not be in football shape. The signing, curious, certainly. But you know what's so funny about that? And normally it's like the week before you play an opponent, you'll grab somebody from a practice squad or somebody for the upcoming opponent. I don't think it's ever really worked out very well. I don't think anybody's gained enough information to make it an honest-to-goodness advantage. if the player's not good enough to make a difference in the game, his intel's probably not going to do much either.
Bob, questions for Paul?
Sure, Paul. Putting aside the catch or no catch controversy last week, were you surprised on the game-ending interception of Roethlisberger trying to throw it in to thread it? Such a it was eerily similar of Russell Wilson a couple years ago, obviously in the Super Bowl. I was just astounded that he was trying it. But then again, you probably knowing Roethlisberger how he is, probably wanted to just end all doubt, get the New England Patriots off his back. What are you hearing about that call?
Well, what I observed was a horrible decision in terms of personnel. Horrible usage of 4 minutes. That review, catch or no catch, took 4 minutes. Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, Ben Roethlisberger, the future potential Hall of Fame quarterback, they didn't have a conversation. They didn't have two plays called. They didn't have anything planned. They wasted that entirety of a four-minute, basically, extended timeout that the Steelers could have taken advantage of. Martavis Bryant, who was a huge difference in the game, was basically uncoverable, not completely like Gronk, but the Patriots were having trouble with him all day. He's not even on the field in the final plays of the game. He's not out there. He's not part of the personnel. So while the catch, no catch went horribly wrong for the Steelers, and it was a very controversial and I would say, you know, difficult call to take, what the Steelers did with what they had left in terms of time was egregiously wrong. If Hayward Bay catches that ball and is somehow tackled, it's game over. You don't throw the ball at the middle of the field. You don't throw the ball into a crowd. If you don't see, you know, if that is your intention on the slant and he's gained the end zone and you still throw it, that's a mistake into a crowd of people. But if you have that as your play and you think you're going to maybe beat the Patriots on that play, and then you see, as he should have seen, it's not open, you chuck the ball into the stands. You throw it six rows deep, and then you live to have another play. And then after that play, even if it doesn't work, you still kick a game-time field goal and take your chances in overtime. That was a horrible, horrible finish by the Steelers on the head coach, the O coordinator, and the quarterback. All of them, you know, guilty by association.
And one of the beauties of having you on the show, Paul, is that we can cross over sports. And I guess what's in the baseball news now, I'm hearing that the Yankees are really interested and almost set to land a guy like Gerrit Cole. And this is a guy that probably hasn't been the same pitcher since 2015, Paul, but still very good, over 200 innings last year. What is his status in Pittsburgh? What is his legacy right now there? What's going to happen to this guy?
You know, that's a great question. The problem is, as a first overall pick in the draft, you're going to have him through his arbitration, you know, eligible years, and that's it. As a full-blown free agent, Gerrit Cole's gone. I always thought he'd head back to the left coast where he's from. So maybe the Pirates want to make sure that before he goes, they get a little something for him. He has unbelievable stuff. He also gave up 32 home runs this year. That's alarming for a guy that throws 98 in the ninth inning, if he ever sees a ninth inning. He still tries to overpower people. He hasn't developed as a pitcher. He's still kind of a thrower in a lot of ways. But there's every pitching coach, I would think, in Major League Baseball that thinks, I can fix this kid because the arm is unbelievable. The arm is absolutely electric. It's overpowering. The stuff, it's not. It's not knee-buckling. Horribly bad swing and miss kind of stuff. To me, if you want to see a major league pitcher with great stuff, watch a good hitter take a horrible swing. Then you know you have a pitcher that is big time. He never really gets that. And again, the 32 home runs were alarming. He's a guy that, you know, of a certain agent that the Pirates know he's not signing a second contract with them. He's going to go to the highest bidder. You're never able, with a certain agent, to, you know, buy out any kind of arbitration years or buy out, you know, an opportunity to get through the first couple of years of free agents. That's not going to happen. So the Yankees seem to be back to being the Yankees again. And if they want to go get, you know, they got Giancarlo Stanton, obviously. So they're in the buying mode. And it's a buyer's market right now. So if someone knocks the Pirates' socks off with prospects and great young talent, they'll definitely deal, you know, Gerrit Cole, even though, you know, he's right now by far their best starting pitcher.
Paul, just a couple more before we let you go. And first, I want to get your feeling. What's the likelihood? What are you hearing on the likelihood that Ryan Chazier just really ever plays again?
I think it's very unlikely. I was so excited by the initial prognosis, which was no surgery, and, you know, it is a spinal contusion. I remember Tommy Maddox, when he was really hot with the Steelers, had a spinal contusion, lost feeling in his legs for a brief period of time. It was very temporary. He came back. He missed one start and made the next start. The fact that they then had to reevaluate that prognosis and do a spinal stabilization surgery right now, as opposed to thinking about his, you know, future playing career, we're more worried about his future career as a human, his future,
right,
you know, life as a functioning, walking, running. His playing career, I think, right now would be in serious jeopardy. And right now, for me, my thoughts and prayers are about, I just hope he's able to have a very normal life and get back to that.
And, Paul, got to get your thoughts on the Penguins here real quick. Certainly, they're off to a slow start, a little over 500. Your thought, is it injuries, or are we starting to see all the extra postseason games that they had to play over the last couple of seasons starting to catch up to them?
Well, you're seeing really, you know, in – unlike baseball, salary caps are designed to prevent any type of dynasties. So they had to part ways with a couple of key players that were really huge in their, you know, second consecutive cup run. So, you know, without Matt Cullen, they've lost their third line center. And right now they're just trying to find a way. And yes, I mean, playing deep into June, the last 2 years, when most of the teams that they're playing, you know, were done sometime at the beginning of May, it's a huge difference. And also, there's a hunger. When you haven't won a championship, I mean, as a coach and as a staff, I think I could get my team to be extremely hungry. That championship's out there. You dangle that as the carrot. You gotta make every sacrifice to win that championship. You got to do this in the offseason to win that championship. Well, these guys have just won two straight. They've all had their day with the cup. They've all had their moment in the sun. They probably have more endorsements than they had the last couple of years. They probably have a couple more zeros in their contracts. So I think there's a hunger element, and I think more importantly, there's a fatigue element. They also believe that since they won the last two cups, there's that switch, that phantom switch somewhere, that when they need to, they'll turn that on and they'll be good to go. We all know that switch doesn't exist. We also know that Metro Division in the NHL right now is killing it. They're 2 points out of last place. I'm happy to report them at the game right now. Patrick Hornquist has scored here in the third period to tie the game at one against Columbus. But Columbus is a very, you know, formidable foe. The Rangers are playing well. The Devils are a big surprise in their division. Washington is always a great regular season team. So they got the work cut out for them. But I'll take my chances with the captain, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Matt Murray, a great young goaltender that, as a rookie, somehow, I guess it's a loosely defined term, rookie in the NHL. Matt Murray won two Stanley Cups as a rookie. I don't know how you get 2 years as a rookie, but he did. Somehow he managed to pull that off. So I think they still have a lot of great pieces. I love Jim Rutherford, the general manager. He's already come out and publicly said, we got to shake this thing up. It's not working right now. So that puts everybody on alert. It's not an absolute given, you know, to be able to remain here for as long as they choose. So all of the, you know, somewhat, I don't know, expendable players understand that if they're not playing, you know, absolutely all out every night, they could be moved. So I think, you know, there's the moratorium right now. They made a couple small moves before the Christmas trade moratorium. But I think as soon as that ends December the 28th, Jim Rutherford's going to make a power play and a big blockhouse trade. You know, going back to the 90s with Al Samuelson and Ronnie Francis and some of the trades the Penguins made to win those two cups. These guys are ready to do whatever it takes to win another one. So don't count them out. But at the same time, please, as a Penguin fan, don't be greedy either. You just won two straight cups. It's okay. Let's not reach for any panic buttons or get, you know, let's not fire anybody or get too upset. These guys are a great group of guys that have just won two consecutive championships. We have cities, you know, that have never tasted one. So it's all good. And I think they'll be fine. I do. I think when it all, you know, all said and done, I'm certainly going to put them into the postseason. As we know in the NHL, unlike a lot of the other sports, the eighth seed in the NHL, and, you know, they have every bit as much of an opportunity to win it all as that number one seed.
So, Paul, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing and follow you on social media.
Well, check us out at AT&T Sportsnet. We're the home of the Pirates and the Penguins. PAlexander44 on Twitter, and just Paul Alexander on Instagram and Facebook. I just love all things sports. I love the positivity that you guys bring. It's an honor and a privilege to be a part of with you guys. So, you guys just keep doing what you're doing, and anytime you call, you know the answer is yes.
We appreciate you very much, Paul. Always a privilege for Bob and I to get to spend some time with you. Again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Merry Christmas, guys. God bless.
Good night.
Take care, Paul. That is the great Paul Alexander. Again, you know, he does the pre- and post-game shows for the Pirates and the Penguins, and he's, you know, all over the Steelers, as you heard. So, boy, it does my heart good, Bob, to get to spend some time with Paul and then, you know, go over the catch, no catch. But I feel a little bit better. I tell you, my blood pressure has been high since Sunday, but I feel a little bit better talking to Paul.
Now, Paul always puts it out there, Chris. He's a Pittsburgh guy, but very, very fair, and he said what a lot of us have said. It was a catch under the rules, but should it be a rule? But anytime we need insight into Pittsburgh sports, and you being a Pittsburgh guy, Chris, you know that he's probably one of our favorite guests for sure, and we love him. That's why he's in our Hall of Fame. He's just as good a human being as he is a journalist.